This is Radio Influence. Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crochelle. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
And welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Crochelle here, the con man behind the glass, and we're your weekly source for performance information. Thanks for tuning in today. If you're new to the show, each week we look at some aspect of human performance, whether it be in sport, business, school, academics, the arts, it doesn't matter. There's so many parallels in all these different arenas of performance that we can learn from, and we reach out to the world's experts to get to the bottom of what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance and how you can do it as well. Look, a lot of people are striving to get better without a rhyme or reason, without a direction or a plan, and it's not that difficult, but we don't know how good somebody can get, and don't let anybody ever tell you whether you can or you can't, whether you will or you won't, because we truly don't know until you've gone through the process. And that's what we look at every single week, the pieces of the puzzle that we can put together to start mapping out a strategy to help anybody reach their potential. And it's a lot of fun. If you have any questions, comments, or smart remarks, get to us. We answer every single message we get, and we answer every question. And if you have a question or a topic you'd like us to look into, let us know as well, because we may dedicate a segment of the show or an entire episode to your idea. And we've done it in the past and recently in June as well. The website is crushperformance.com. On Twitter, you can follow us at Jeff Crush. And on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, just search Crush Performance and we're there. And if you get a chance to go to our YouTube channel, check out our animated Crush Reports. We're having a lot of fun with those. Our art people and graphic design people are second to none, some of the best in the world. We're really having a lot of fun with that, but just a different way to spread the message. And if you want to get involved a little bit more or stay connected, you can go to our website, Crush Performance, and sign up for our weekly newsletter. The podcast, all of our information, releases, books, free giveaways are there. We'd love to have you on board for sure. Today, we're going to continue our conversation from last week, looking at development. Last week, the show's title was Going Pro. Again, you can get that podcast on our website. But it was a great conversation looking at all the things that need to be considered when you decide to go pro. Of course, with all the professional drafts now done, it was a timely discussion. We had some great guests on board. But going pro, all right, we talked about the odds of going pro, and they're not good, right? They're not really great, but somebody has to play. And it goes back to that conversation we just mentioned that, you know, if you want to give it a try, if you have the wherewithal, the desire, the passion to get it done, and the opportunity, maybe most important, to get it done, go for it. Just make sure you have a really good plan that you can bounce and course correct from. Because without that plan, it truly is like shooting in the dark. And looking at the odds of going pro, look, it's hard enough as it is. Without a plan, man, those odds just get deeper and deeper and worse. So you can really, really influence your odds of chasing down your dream and reaching your potential just by planning properly. And we had a couple great guests last week that helped us sort of set that up. We talked with registered psychologist John Stevenson about the mental side of the game. Now, if you've listened to the show before, you will know that I am a firm believer that one of the last great areas that's available to us for pushing human performance forward is the mind. The technology we have, certainly in terms of equipment we use, is going to influence human performance. But the technology we now have that is allowing us to tap into, train, and see what's happening in the mind real time. Listen, there's never been a time in human history where this has been possible. So not only are we making great strides in just psychology, in the psychology of sport, in terms of it being accepted, utilized at every single level of development, but now we're also able to really help athletes understand and train their mind in terms of confidence, anxiety, focus, discipline, and just that calming place you need to be before you attack in competition. So, so powerful. I have really, honestly, in my 25 to maybe 30 years of being involved in high performance sports, I don't think I've ever been as excited as I am right now for the future of what we're able to do. And I think we're going to see in the next 5 years some really, really incredible things happen. That being said, that's only one small piece of the puzzle, the mindset, the psychology. That's one small piece of the entire big puzzle that creates a performance plan. We also spoke last week with a good friend of the show, Manny Schmidt, certified NHL agent. And I've had a chance to work on the agency side of it, the agent side of professional sport. And I'm not going to lie to you, I totally enjoy it. It's such a refreshing side of the game. Now, don't get me wrong. There's nothing like being on the competitive side, the organizational side of sport, because you are battling and fighting every day to optimize performance of every single player on a team. And then inside that organization, you want to create an environment where everybody can tap into their potential. And that's a true art form. Again, pieces of the puzzle coming together. Now, on both sides of sport, the organizational side and the agency side of it, you need to have that performance team. On the organizational side, it's a very different approach than it is on the agency side. The thing that I liked about the agent side of it, and regardless of the sport, is the long-term planning of the athlete, helping them deal with the challenges of organizational changes, moving up the developmental ranks inside of their sport, helping them adapt, and long-term planning, pre, during, and post-career planning. Man, it's so much fun. And then helping them integrate into new organizations or new training philosophies as they move and through their careers. I found that really, really rewarding. On the organizational side, there's nothing like building the high-performance infrastructure where athletes can perform at their very peak or as close to it as possible every single day. If you're in the competitive sports like the multi-competition sports like Major League Baseball, the most grueling competitive schedule in all of professional sports. But you can look at NHL hockey, the NFL, which is a dream sort of schedule once a week, but such a brutal sport to train for. The NBA, professional soccer. You look at the Olympic sports. You can look at tennis, golf, and the major events that athletes need to be peaking for. There's strategies inside of each one of these sports that are unique to that sport, but yet there's fundamental principles of human performance that apply across the board. And this is where it gets fun. When you have all the experts on board, when you put together your performance team, whether it's in the organization or whether it's with the agency side, man, things really, really do happen. And that's kind of what this show is all about. And that's what I love to do. And that's the message we like to share here. Last week, Manny Schmidt on the agency side really had some great insights talking about the hockey draft. And, you know, with the NFL draft earlier in the year, we had Major League Baseball, the NBA, and the NHL draft in succession here, boom, 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 in June. This is a really exciting time in the sporting world as a great new talents enter the system. These are the talents in the next 3, 4, 5 years are really going to influence the game at the highest level. Now, who will get there? We don't know yet. But if an organization is really in tune with what's going on and they're well organized internally, and I'm talking from the agency side and from the organizational side of sport, you have to find a way to tap into the potential of each and every one of those young talents so your team can perform at the highest level possible. And there are tricks to the trade to that. And we had a great discussion with Manny Schmidt last week. Again, I think this would be worthy of going back to the podcast because just a great discussion with both John and Manny about the developmental process. Manny talked about some interesting things when we spoke about increasing the value of a player and helping them get noticed and creating an opportunity to just be invited into the next level of the game. Manny kind of used the analogy of getting a ticket to the party. It means you're in the door, but it means you're sort of in the waiting room. You're not on the dance floor yet. The draft is kind of like just the ticket to the party. It gets you in the door. Now you got to work your way over to the bar, get yourself a drink, scope out the landscape, and you've got to work your way to that dance floor so you can get out there and perform. I thought it was a great analogy, and I think it's something that our athletes need to think about. If you're talking about or thinking about going pro, you got to look at the big picture. We get caught up in sort of, I guess, focusing on the physical side of sport. Let's just talk about sport here for a second. This can apply to your business. This can apply to your academics, your school. This can apply to anywhere there's human performance, but sport is just so measured. It's a great reference point for us. So if we talk about sport, for example, it's really easy to get caught up in the physical side of that arena of human performance. Faster, higher, stronger. We have a great grasp of this, but also you get immediate results from training. It's very tangible. But again, that's only one small piece of the puzzle. We could look at academics, or we could look at any business where there's skill involved. We could talk about the first point of contact for a company, the person who answers the phone, whoever that might be. If that person is not doing a good job of answering that phone and taking care of that customer immediately, well, there's not going to be a lot of success there. The first impression is terrible. If you're an athlete only focusing on the physical side of the game, man, you're missing so many factors of human performance. And this is where you got to look at this holistic approach, this whole big picture concept of what it takes to really tap into your potential. And regardless of where you want to go, whether you're just in it for fun, maybe you want to just be challenged, maybe you're just playing to work for your personal best, whether you're trying to have the best quarter of business that your company has ever had, whether you're trying to get a college scholarship and you need to ace a math exam, you have to prepare yourself for performance. And that means covering all the bases. And that is ultimately the process of human development. And it's so much fun once you really understand what's going on in the big picture. But it all starts somewhere. And this is one of the cruxes, I think, in terms of our developmental programs right now across the board, where we're missing the boat. We all want to start halfway down the line rather than really digging in and putting in that sweat equity at the start, which is so, so important. So in sport, for example, it all starts at the grassroots. The coaches at the grassroots might be the most valuable commodity in that organization, because they're the ones who are in charge of developing, one, the interest, the basic skill set, and then the progression of skills needed to help athletes perform. We have to be very, very aware of what the goals and objectives are at every single level of development, because they change as athletes progress, and individually they can change inside of a stage of development because we have so much variation between each individual. But if we stick to the main theme of development in that particular age group, everybody should be prepared to move to the next level when it's time. And therein lies one of the biggest problems in our developmental model. We want to rush to the finish line. And I'm telling you right now, there are no shortcuts at all. So in the world of sport, to invest in the development and education of coaches at every level of development might be the best money you'll ever spend. We're going to have more success. We're going to have kids who enjoy the sport. We're going to have coaches who are competent, who can develop athletes and players that they can now hand off to the next level of development for those coaches to further develop. And that's the true essence of a developmental model. In business, the great companies really invest in the education and skill set of their managers, the managers who are working with the people. Their job is to help every single employee maximize their performance. And it's a tall order, but it's absolutely critical to organizational success. In the academic world, well, the best teachers, do they get the best results out of their students? You better believe it. There's no doubt about it. We have all had those terrible teachers that we just can't learn from. Here's the thing you got to keep in mind. Whether you thought that teacher was terrible, does that necessarily mean that every student in that class thought that teacher was terrible? Or did that teacher not just connect to you? Now, there becomes the art of coaching, leading, and teaching. You have to find a way to connect with every person in that classroom because, well, that's what you're charged to do. Same thing in coaching. So in sport, supporting the development of our coaches at every single level is just critically important. Later in the show, we're going to go back to the fun maps, Amanda Visick's work, the great work done out of George Washington University, looking at why kids play, the 81 top reasons. Winning, by the way, wasn't even close to being in the top 10. It was barely in the top half of the 81 reasons kids said they love to play sport. But coming out of that research were 11 really key points of what kids found important in their coaches. And we're going to talk about each and every one of those later in the show because they're really, really important. Now, listen, I coach my daughter's U15 soccer team. I've coached my daughter's, helped coach my daughter's ski team. I've coached baseball teams. I help with basketball. And, you know, there's nothing I appreciate more than the volunteer coaches who get out there and donate their time to let the kids play. Now, I personally find it incredibly rewarding. I love, first of all, spending time with my kids, but also their friends, and helping them get better, helping these young athletes get better. Listen, I love working in the pros as well. There's nothing better than sending a guy to his first All-Star game or helping a guy get a contract extension or just helping everybody perform on a daily basis so your team can actually win at the highest level of sport. Don't get me wrong, that's really rewarding as well. But on the developmental side, man, it's just so much fun. But like anything, with the fun comes the challenges. A couple of weeks ago at my daughter's U15 soccer game, they're getting close to playoffs, so they're in a heated matchup against one of the top teams in their division. And there was a collision on the field. So we ran out, of course, to help our player and assess what happened. And luckily, she turned out to be okay. But we looked over to the other team. I looked over to the other team's player on the ground. And she was really, really hurt. And I just was looking at how these coaches and the parent helper were assessing and treating this injured athlete. And it really took me back because as I saw that young girl laying on the ground crying and screaming in pain and the coaches not really sure about what to do, it got me thinking about some of the tough situations we get in as volunteer coaches just helping the kids get out there and play. Some of it can be really, really concerning when you have a serious injury. There's no athletic trainers around. What do you do? Who do you call? Do you have an emergency plan? Have you designated somebody to take charge? Have you designated somebody to make the call and go meet the ambulance if it's needed? These are the types of things that we need to think about on top of all the fun stuff that we do with the kids. We need to be prepared. So again, in support of our coaches, that takes us to our next guest. Right after this break, we will speak with Wayne Perro, senior coaching consultant for one of the best coaching organizations on the planet, the Coaching Association of Canada. Countries from all over the world are turning to the CAC for guidance in coaching development because they are some of the best on the planet. And coming up after the break, we're going to tap into that great, vast knowledge and talk about emergency planning and some great tips to help us all be better coaches for our young athletes. That's coming up right after this on Crush Performance. Stick around, everyone. I've done a couple presentations recently, one of the latest to an urban sport council. It was a 90-minute presentation that turned into an incredible 3-hour performance extravaganza. So much fun. And then I was asked to speak to the staff and employees of a construction company. What does a sport performance guy have to say to a construction company, you ask? Well, plenty. See, the strategies we use for improving performance in sport are virtually the same as the ones we use anywhere you're trying to perform or work towards a goal or outcome. If you want you or your organization to be successful, you need to make sure you have the best performance environment possible. And there are performance factors you can influence to improve productivity, on-the-job performance, and maybe most important of all, reduce the risk of injury. This is what I love to talk about. Everything you need to know so you, your team, franchise, business, or organization can operate at the highest level possible. I've been lucky to speak in many parts of the world, to sporting organizations, bankers, oil companies, sales teams, municipalities, schools, and now a construction company, all in the name of helping people to understand what it takes to perform at their very best. Right now, we're currently booking Crush Performance summer and fall presentations. If you'd like us to come out and present to your group, please write to us at info@crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
If you have any performance questions, comments, or smart remarks, text Crusher at 101260 and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. Listen, if you're interested in pushing your potential or your performance to new heights, go to our website and sign up for our weekly newsletter. You can subscribe there and get links to the podcast, all the great information we're sharing, as well as some of our guests. And of course, our weekly newsletter, where we're just trying to spread the good word and guide people along the path of putting together the puzzle of performance. It's been a ton of fun so far, and I want to thank everybody for signing up. But if you're interested, if you have an athlete, if you're a coach, if you're a parent, I think it'd be great to sign up, and we'd also like to hear from you. So if you have those questions, comments, or smart remarks that we love, do get to us there. Today, we're looking at one of the cornerstone pieces of that performance puzzle, the coaches. And maybe more so, the developmental coaches who are helping our grassroots athletes, one, learn to love sport, two, develop those fundamental skills that they'll need to just stay involved. And if they wind up choosing to go a high-performance route, if that's in their future, well, hey, man, that's just a great side benefit of a good sporting program. but we need to support our coaches. So again, the next time you see a coach at any level in any sport, shake their hand, give them a thank you, because, wow, you know, taking your free time, volunteering to let the kids get out and play, that is a noble, noble pursuit. So today we want to talk about that. I coach my daughter's teams, and I have for years and years, and I've met a bunch of great coaches in our community, of course. And there's nothing more important, but it's also pretty difficult if you're not familiar with the world of sports. So what do we do? Where do we turn for information? How can we get some help? There's a lot of great resources out there. But if you're going to look for an incredible coaching development model or coaching support system, you have to look to the Canadian sports system. There are countries around the world that not only try to learn this, there are countries that buy this system from Sport Canada because it is so, so good. Of course, they've spearheaded the long-term athlete approach that's being adopted all around the globe. Right in parallel with that incredible program is the coaching development program. And for coaches who are, you know, looking for some support and some help, which is always needed, especially at the developmental levels, from practice planning to drills to ethics and strategies, there are some good resources out there. And to share some of those insights right now, we're joined by our good friend Wayne Perreault, Senior Coaching Consultant for the Coaching Association of Canada. Wayne, so great to have you back on the show.
Thanks, Crush. Good day.
So, I coach my daughter's U15 soccer team, and this is a team that's sort of been together, for the last, let's say, 5-6 years. They started as little duffers together, and they moved up together, and they play indoor, and the girls play different sports, but I had a real experience earlier this summer, and I thought of you immediately, because I wanted to ask you these questions. So one of the girls on the other team, there was a collision, and both girls got hurt. We had a girl hurt from our team, and their girl really, really was hurt. And the volunteer coaches run over with the bench mom, and they dive right in. And of course, you know, in my background in sport, I've seen some of the best, you know, athletic trainers and sports medicine people at work. So I've got an okay feel for that sort of thing. But it just made me think, Wayne, you have these volunteer coaches running over the sideline. You have a kid who's potentially very injured, maybe not, but potentially very injured. This is a very vulnerable spot for volunteer coaches, Wayne. And, you know, with your role with the Coaching Association of Canada, I wanted to sort of open up the conversation with that scenario and some of the things that I think coaches really need to be thinking about when they're dealing with not just young players, but injured young players.
Yeah, and those situations, as frequent as they occur, usually they turn out to be nothing serious in the end, which is, we're all grateful for that. But there's that very low number of injuries that occur on a playing field that turn out to be more than what they are. For example, concussion. That's the most common issue that we're dealing with in coaching these days and in sport in general. The problem that we have is that we have this huge base of volunteer coaches that get lots of technical training and they get some safety training. And if we're really lucky, they have some professional training through their own other career that allows them to look at a situation a little differently. But that volunteer coach that doesn't have a significant amount of training, I mean, we're talking about everything here from potential long-term injury to an athlete to liability for a coach. There's so many things at play here that we need to be aware of.
Yeah, and Wayne, that's one thing that really crossed my mind, because in my business, of course, liability is a very, very big part of professional sports and high-end sport for sure. But the liability at that level is also there. And, you know, I was just watching this and, you know, and again, volunteer coaches, God bless the coaches that get out there and let the kids play. But what a predicament to be in, because, you know, maybe you panic, or maybe you don't understand, or maybe you're not sure what the long-term implications might be of an injury, whether it's an ankle, knee, head injury, or most importantly, in this scenario, I was worried about this young player's neck. We were focusing on our player to start with, but by the time I got over there, and again, not saying I know everything, but I've got a little experience in this area, I was really, really nervous about this player's neck, and they already had her sitting up and almost walking off the field. I said, no, hold on, lay back down, and let's just assess what's going on here. So it's an interesting one. And I think maybe, Wayne, just in very simple terms for all the coaches, parents, and athletes out there, we don't want to raise alarm. I think this is more about education. Just standard common sense sort of prevails here. But the basic first aid treatments, man, assess, evaluate, and then move forward in a logical progression.
Well, absolutely. And I'll take it one step further. The NCCP planning a practice module, which is integrated into many sports, or it's a standalone module, we prepare coaches with an emergency action plan. And I'm going to be honest with you, I've had a ton of experience delivering that module in a sport environment or a multi-sport environment. And it's amazing how some people don't take this seriously enough. And, you know, it's just that one time that it happens when you need it. So we really stress the importance of having an emergency action plan, which means you have to have a charge person, somebody that takes charge of the situation, like you just said. And one of the key components of that is don't move the athlete. One of the things we're looking for here after what appears to be a serious collision or an injury or resulting in an injury is, are they mobile on their own? If they're not mobile on their own, the worst thing we can do is try to help them move. And then the second thing we have in the emergency action plan, of course, is the call person. And they take a signal from the charge person and we get help. And I've seen this executed beautifully in hockey arenas, on soccer fields, baseball diamonds, where, yeah, you know, you just want to be sure. Always err on the side of caution when it comes to these issues. And if I could, I'll take it one step further.
Absolutely.
Our Make Ethical Decisions workshop uses a scenario where we have an injured athlete. And the question becomes an ethical one. What would you do in a situation like this? Would you let an athlete play or would you not let them play? In the case that you describe, you have an athlete that is apparently, more than likely, injured at some level. What would you do? And common sense says err on the side of caution and bring in professionals that can address the situation much better than somebody that doesn't have the skills to do a proper assessment at that particular time.
Yeah, great stuff. We're talking with Wayne Perro, the senior coaching consultant for the Coaches Association of Canada. Wayne, you know, we just went through Canada Day, July 4th, and it's a big time in the summer. And I can say with all my travels globally, Canada's a really, really impressive place to be in terms of developmental sport. I think everywhere I go, eyes are sort of turned to Canada for long-term athlete development, of course. But also, I think we have one of the premier coaching development programs on the planet because it correlates so well with the levels of player and player performance. Something to really be proud of, this coaching program we have in Canada. And I think that's why a lot of the nations around the world look to Canada for a little guidance here.
Well, not only do they look for guidance, they buy our program. It is that good, honestly. And the beauty about it is the Coaching Association of Canada has just recently embarked on a five-year program to revise all of our content. That includes coach.ca, our website that has numerous resources on it. And that will also snowball out into the sports system. We have 66 national sport partners. All of their content will be updated as well as a result of what we're doing. Now, some of those sport partners are already updating their coach development program, which is great. But when we match up what we're doing with what they're doing, the program is just getting better and better. One of the things that we're really pushing hard into now is understanding how young adults, up-and-coming coaches are learning. And one of the things that is in my portfolio right now is blended learning. So I'm the lead for the CAC on the blended learning portfolio, which means with our partners, we're looking at how can we integrate e-learning or online delivery into the existing program as we go through these revision cycles. It's really exciting in terms of what we're able to do. I want to flip it back to the comment that I made a little while ago. Planning a practice is one of the modules that we're currently revising. And we think it looks this way when we're done the revision at the end of March of 2019, that emergency action plan will be much more functional. It'll be an e-learning module that'll be done in advance of the actual planning a practice module. And then that takes me, sorry to ramble here.
No, let's have it. Yeah, no, let's have it.
This takes me one step further. When we understand how people learn, and we're getting better at this, you know, we're going to be building modular learning that we can piece together rather than having coaches sit in a classroom for 6 hours. Some of it, as I said before, will be in a blended format where there may be some e-learning. Some of that classroom time might be delivered through an online medium, and the rest of it, I mean, we always have to remember that coaching is a personable vocation. In other words, we don't coach our athletes through the internet. We coach them in person. So we still have to train certain components of the coaching program in person, but we're looking at making it far more accessible and modular, and it can interact with other concepts that we're putting together. And some sports are even starting to link their officials program through e-learning to their coaching program, which is extremely exciting.
Yeah, no, I like this, Wayne. I really do. And you know, you brought up an interesting thought here as you were talking about this and how athletes or coaches learn, athletes learn, and that sort of that connection that has to happen between the coach and the athlete. So, so important. You know, one of the issues with all the volunteer coaches is, you know, they're working 9 to 5 and maybe on top of that, doing some other volunteer work, plus they're coaching their kids. It's a tall order. And you know, that's why we're so glad to have these coaches come out. Time is so important. I really like the idea of having this sort of e-learning avenue for coaches who are really busy to begin with.
Well, and that's exactly the point. You know, you outlined it very well. Adults typically, and I don't know the specific numbers, but there's a very large total of coaches in Canada that are volunteers, got into coaching because they put their children in sport. And, you know, they wanted to get more involved, or they were the closest person to the equipment bag when the convener threw their hand up and said, okay, who wants to coach? And, you know, there's a time factor, there's a money factor that plays into coach education. And what we're trying to do is swing the pendulum the other way to help people understand that the National Coaching Certification Program is there as a resource, not as a burden. And therefore, it's incumbent on us, which is exactly what we're doing, to make it more accessible and easier for coaches to get the learning that they require.
Great stuff. We're talking with Wayne Perro, the Senior Coaching Consultant for the Coaches Association of Canada. Wayne, the intersport idea now is really important. You know, we're seeing athletes in the big issue of specialization in sport sort of, you know, rear its ugly head, and it's here to stay. Whether it's ugly or good, I think maybe the jury's still out. I think there's different opinions on that, but we're trying to encourage our athletes at a young age to experience and get involved in as many sports as possible. How does the coaching development sort of ebb and flow from sport to sport now? Because I think this would be really important to have some continuity there as well.
Well, and again, the coach education program is built around a multi-sport environment for all of the soft skills of coaching. The technical coaching education program is delivered by the sport. Some sports have integrated the multi-sport components into the technical, but we've got very good people across the country that are multi-sport people that can deliver the multi-sport modules and relate it well to people from multiple sports in one session. So again, those are your planning, your practice, basic mental skills, teaching and learning, those components, I like to refer to those as the soft skills of coaching. Those are all available to all sports. Some have integrated, like I said, some haven't. The beauty about it is it's portable from sport to sport to sport. Once you know how to build a practice plan for a hockey team, you can build a practice plan for a soccer team in the summer. Once you know how to design a season plan for a basketball team, you can also design a season plan for a baseball team. It's you know, the skills that we're training are very portable in that respect.
Yeah, such great stuff. And that's so important because then we have some continuity between sports. But to give those coaches those resources, so great. Hey, Wayne, on the physical side, we know that the technical, tactical side, as you mentioned, is pretty well taken care of. We've got a really good resources, and our coaching education system is pretty good. And we're seeing that beautiful cycle now where, kids who have played sport all their lives are now coaching sport, that sort of big sport sporting cycle is coming full circle, and it has for some time now. But now we're stepping into, and it's maybe even allowed us to get to hear Wayne, is to start addressing some of the physical literacy side, some of the athletic side of young athlete development that isn't necessarily sports specific. This is a big part of it now, and I think this has bigger implications beyond sport just to our society's health and wellness as well.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it strikes me, you and I were speaking before we got on air here today, but it strikes me when I do baseball clinics for younger kids and we do a dynamic warm-up, it absolutely mystifies me how physically illiterate young children are. And I can take 50 baseball players under the age of 10 and put them through some very basic coordination dynamic warm-up drills, which I know you're intimately familiar with. In fact, helped me develop those drills. We have to slow them down to a crawl just to get the players to understand the movement. Once they get the movement, it's remarkable how quickly they learn. But, you know, this then progresses into the sport-specific skills. The sport-specific skills can only be perfected if we've got that foundation in place of fundamental movement skills or physical literacy, as is referred to. So there's a big boom in the sport world right now, both in coaching and all forms of athlete development around physical literacy. It's a wave that we need to ride because, you know, you talked about life after sport or alluded to that. I mean, when you just going out and wanting to cut the grass and you're on the side of a hill and you need to be coordinated pushing a lawnmower, I mean, we take that for granted. But if we have those physical literacy skills, you know, day-to-day tasks become much more easy.
Yeah, great stuff, Wayne. Well, listen, fantastic conversation. And I think the bottom line here is there are great resources available for those coaches. And now that we're going to be delivering them in a time or in an era in a way that is pretty accessible for coaches who have busy schedules and not a lot of free time, such a big move forward, Wayne. We've come such a long way, and coach.ca is a big part of that up in Canada. And again, so proud of that program up there in north of the border because it's really a world leader. Any final advice, closing remarks for the coaches out there, Wayne, who are maybe just getting involved in coaching, or even some of those senior guys who might be sort of set in their ways, been coaching for years and years? There's a lot of new cool things going on.
Yeah, that's the thing. Keep your eyes open, because even though you may have traversed the pathway of coach development and become certified as a coach, things are changing, times are changing. The NCCP has implemented through all of the sports a maintenance and certification program, which is typically 3 to 5 years. Some sports have a lower or shorter time frame, but in order to maintain your certification beyond that time frame, you have to do X number of professional development activities that provide you with points. Points are really easy to get, especially now that we're revising all of this content. And, you know, we're trying to send the message that this is a resource, not a barrier.
Yeah,
to coaches to get better.
Yeah, great stuff, Wayne. Well, thanks so much for your time today and everything you guys are doing over there for sports in general, Wayne. Really appreciate it today.
Great. Thanks, Crush. Appreciate your time.
Well, there you go. Wayne Perro. When it comes to coaching, he is salt of the earth and worth his very weight in gold. No question about it. Have to thank Wayne for all of his insights there. Listen, such a great resource. The entire organization does a great job from coast to coast in Canada, and that's why it's such a sought-after program, the coaching development program. Is there anything more important, especially at the developmental levels? Hey, we have to cut out for a quick break. When we come back, let's finish up this discussion on coaching. There's a lot of things to consider when it comes to, I guess, putting together a performance environment for developing young talent. And it doesn't matter which arena you're talking about. This could be art, music, school, academics. It could be business. It could be working in the trades. It doesn't matter. Anywhere there's humans trying to get better at something, there's principles you can apply. And I also want to get back to some of the fundamental ideas of why coaches are so important in development right after this on Crush Performance. Stick around, everybody.
Crush Performance. We're your weekly source for performance information. Join me, Jeff Crochelle, and the Con Man as we dig deep into the science and research of talent development and skill acquisition to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it really takes to achieve human maximum performance. And go to our website, crushperformance.com, to get details on my brand new book, The Performance Plan, strategies for top performance in sport, business, coaching, and life. Our goal is to help you get better, and it starts with the performance plan. Get control, get focused, and get results. We're Crush Performance. Join us weekly right here on Radio Influence.
Find out what it takes to be a top performer. Get the Crush blog, podcast, and newsletter at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back, everybody. Thanks for sticking around. Today, we are talking about coaching, coaching support, coaching development. It all comes down to that grandiose idea of leadership. Somebody has to lead that ship. And when it comes to leadership, you also have to make sure that the people in your charge have the opportunity to aspire, develop, and chase down their dreams. That's what it's all about. Let's take the team setting, for example. Would it be safe to say we are the sum of our parts? And by team, I mean, we could be looking at a sports team. We could be looking at a business unit. We could be looking at a construction site. It doesn't matter. Anywhere there's a group of people working together for a common goal. I think it's safe to say that we're the sum of our parts. Now, here's the catch 22 for anybody who wants to be involved in a group like that. You have to raise your value to the point where you can contribute at the level of your peers. And that's progressive development. That's long-term development in a nutshell. And that's the whole idea behind a developmental program. And there's nothing more important inside a developmental program than the leadership or coaching involved. Because let's just face it, the charges, the athletes, the people in the organization, how are they supposed to know? They don't know. You know, I look at our professional athletes. And they're incredibly talented human beings. They have really, truly done something exceptional to make themselves special at what they do, regardless of their sport. But when we sit back and look at everything that goes into creating those individuals, there is no possible way they could have gotten there by themselves. We could take an individual sport like golf or tennis. Let's look at some of the greatest athletes out there right now. Not one of them got to the point that they're at by themselves. It is not possible. A great example is last week's show. We were talking about going pro, the odds of going pro. We talked to John Stevenson, registered psychologist, about the mental side of the game and what we can do with the brain now and the mental side of sport to push performance forward. Well, John recently got a huge shout out from Braden Holtby, the goaltender for the Stanley Cup champion Washington Capitals. It was just a great gesture on Braden's part. He didn't have to do it, but he took the time to recognize somebody who truly impacted his development over the years. He started working with John back when he was 15, and they're still in touch today. And that's just a great example of the influence a coach, teacher, mentor, manager can have on a developing person. It's all powerful, and it's quite a privilege as well. Let's not forget that. And at the developmental levels, it's quite a commitment. If you're working a job and you have kids playing sports and you're coaching on top of it all, well, that's one heck of a commitment. And we have to thank Wayne Perro again for coming on and sharing some of his insights into the coaching world and the development of coaches. And we talked about some very important things there, things like planning a practice. It might seem fundamental, basic, but it's really, if you think about it, not all that simple. There's preparation time and thinking that has to go into a practice plan. And if you're laying out your entire season, they had better be progressive, building on one another. We also talked about emergency action plans, ethical decision making, and something called physical literacy. Again, that's the athletic side. One of the most powerful parts of our sporting system, I believe, is our ability to take a multifaceted approach to development. We can get the skills, the technical, tactical, as well as the physical side together. And if you have a really good practice plan, you can work that physical development into your warm-up and into your cool-down and into the rotations in your practice. It's all powerful when we start thinking about the long-term development, but also, you know, in injury prevention and keeping kids involved, so, so important. And there are some great resources out there. There's some not-so-great resources, but the one we mentioned in our conversation with Wayne Perro is Coach coach.ca, one of the great resources up in Canada, north of the border, where they're working magic on their developmental systems. There's also some great stuff going on south of the border, right in the U.S. Some of the greatest research recently on coaching and youth development has come from George Washington University. Back in May, we had Dr. Amanda Visick on to talk about their great work revolving around why kids play sport. And they've got this great system called Fun Maps. It lays out why kids play and what's important to kids in terms of what makes youth sport fun. Well, there's a bunch of things. There was 81 specific determinants that they identified as factors for why kids play. And winning, by the way, wasn't even in the top 10. It was barely made the top half, as a matter of fact. And out of this research, they were able to identify determinants of positive coaching in regard to fun. And it's really, really important to kids. Here's a clip of our conversation with Dr. Amanda Visick talking about positive coaching and the character traits of a good coach as defined by the kids.
The way that the kids define positive coaching with respect to fun, first and foremost, a coach treating players with respect, following a coach that is really knowledgeable about the sport. One of the things that's really, I think, key there is you have knowledge that's becoming synonymous with fun. And that really feeds into the idea of learning and improving, which is the next fun factor. So when we have a coach that is respectful, is knowledgeable, who really serves as a really great role model for the kids, that is really encouraging, that is very good at providing clear, consistent communication in terms of coaching instruction. Kids also identified coaches that allow them to make mistakes, but are still encouraging and positive. Coaches that are approachable, they're easy to talk to, they're friendly. Even coaches that are able to get off the sidelines during practice and jump into the drills, they really enjoy as well. So I think the kids have done really a phenomenal job of breaking down from their perspective what in a coach makes it fun.
There you go. That's a great conversation we had back in May with Dr. Amanda Visick talking about their work called the Fun Maps, why kids play. And winning wasn't even in the top of the conversation. It didn't even relate to the top half, barely in the top half of the 81 determinants of why kids play. The number one reason is to have fun, everybody. Listen, if you frame it upright, getting better is fun. There's a time in every practice at every level for getting work done. But if you do it right, that dedicated effort, that practice time where you're focusing in and getting work done, it can be a lot of fun. The joy of effort, maybe. One of the biggest challenges that we have at the professional level of the game is keeping it fun. Look, these are just guys who are out there, and it's a little more serious up there. There's business, and there's money, and there's people watching, but you still have to make it fun. And look at the successful teams. They're having fun, and that comes from the leadership. Make no mistake about it. So hats off and gratitude to all the coaches who are going out there and creating environments for our young people and even our pros to play, practice, and get better at their crafts. Great stuff. So that's going to do it for today, everybody. I want to thank Wayne Perro once again for joining us and sharing his great insights today. And I want to thank you guys for tuning in. Coming up in the next few weeks on Crush Performance, it is the Midsummer Classic. The Major League Baseball All-Star Game is coming on, and we've got a couple of shows surrounding that event before and after. We're going to be talking about the topic of ice again and why ice is disappearing from injury management and recovery. Some great conversations coming up there. We're also going to look at the game of baseball. We're going to talk to some of the great athletic development people in the game, and we're also going to look at the game at large. It is facing some big challenges right now. Is anybody out there as worried about the game of baseball as I am right now? Well, we're going to have a look at some of the issues the game is facing. And of course, we're going to do our mid-season analysis. We're going to look at which organization is getting the biggest bang for the buck. We'll look at the starting payrolls as to the mid-season standings. We're going to look at the standings in general and try to extrapolate what's going to happen going into the postseason. And we're going to see who's really fallen off the grid and who's been surprisingly successful. There's a lot of great storylines in the game of baseball as well, so stay tuned for that. We're also going to have a great show on sleep science. We're going to do a deep dive into the NCAA. Should the players get paid in the NCAA? There is no shortage of things to talk about when it comes to college sports. All those episodes and many more coming up this summer. And if you have a question or an idea you'd like us to look into, let us know. Again, crushperformance.com is the website. Thanks for tuning in today, everybody. Now, go out there and get better. Talk to you next week on Crush Performance.
Goodbye now. Don't forget to write. This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I want to welcome our guest to City Ringside, podcast host to the stars, Conrad Thompson.
What's really weird is, without, you know, somebody listing Ric Flair robe on eBay, I don't know that any of this would have ever happened. Because without, you know, me getting the robe, I don't know that I would have paid more attention to wrestling and seen the Kickstarter or bought the belt or been introduced to Cornette. I mean, you just follow that all the way down the rabbit hole, and it spidered out all through my life because I actually met my fiance through Ric Flair. It's his oldest daughter, Megan. And he said, oh, you should meet Conrad. And she had seen me several times and we had talked several times, but never in a situation where it was like that. It was always just, I'm her dad's friend. And ta-da, it worked out. She's part of the family now. And I've got podcasts with other people not named Ric Flair and a show on the network, all because of, it's a weird story, man, to say the least.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.